for me, there's one story at the moment, that's what he makes of.
So you have to just listen to her because she's so beautiful, right?
So that's your criteria for valid news stories, is it? How good looking is...
That's so the most compelling reason so far that I've heard.
Isn't it?
I mean, what would we preserve on Waihi?
If someone somewhere is trying to suppress it, that's news. Everything else is advertising.
Now, Eden Park's useless seats, here's my known story, or one of them. This is just how to beat up a story.
Peacocky and Bulldogs, taking a light-hearted look at what the local, national and international papers are printing. Sunday mornings, 10 to 11am, right here on Waiheke Radio, 88.3 or 107.4 FM.
Dramatic. Oh, fantastic. So, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Beat Copy and Bulldogs on another stunning island day. My guest this week, hooray, everybody says he's got a guest again at last, so I don't have to keep ranting on. Although I do have some research, as you know, one of my things is about research, so I've got a little bit of research tucked away about the positive effects of ranting. But my guest today, who's actually known for a rant or two in his own time, is Mr. Damien Smith. Damien, welcome back. Thank you very much for joining me on this beautiful Sunday morning.
Thank you. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Is it? I do apologize. No, you're winding me up. I'm going, did I miss? Damien, social entrepreneur, business strategist, advisor, amongst other things, and indeed, local celeb, I think is fair to say, based on the Waiheke marketplace that I happen to see on page 10, listeners, if you still have a copy. In this story here, Stars in Your Eyes event raises funds for Waiheke Hospice. So I think we'll go here for our first story of the day.
Well, it's a great cause, the hospice, and it doesn't get any government funding. So over the next two Thursday nights, there's 10 people in each show going to be various celebrities and singing songs from that era. And you can go along, and it's at the Waiheke Primary School.
Oh, the school?
Yeah.
Fabulous.
And it's a big venue, and there'll be a big sign, and there'll be lots of nice drinks and food, and a charity auction raising. And it all leads to a grand final on the 2nd of April, which is Saturday night. So three people for me, I think it's four people, go forward to the grand final.
Right.
And so I can't tell you who I'm going to be.
Oh, you can? I was going to ask.
Everybody's asking.
Is there a clause you have to sign that says you won't reveal?
Until you walk out on the
right?
stage.
So nobody knows. It's all
nobody
secrecy.
Knows. Yes.
Damn. But, any clues? I've been watching. I've moved on from Mad Men box set DVDs. Oh, hello. We're getting a slight. Yeah. I did see a foot tap wrestle into that in the middle of tone one. Mm-hmm. What else did I... I was given a lie to me. My pal said, look, have a look at this. You might like this program, Lie to Me, with Tim Roth in it, which is brilliant. So I don't know if you know this one. He looks for micro signals that the body gives away about what people are saying. So I could quiz you about potential music genres just to see your facial reactions to get an indication about what you...
All I can reveal is...
Oh, here we go, folks. You heard it here first.
Is that I go on last and I'm going to take the house down. It's going to be great. But it's a great event, so come along and...
It is for the hospice, eh? That's fantastic.
Yeah. And this is our major fundraiser for the year, so...
And it's a big, I don't suppose you say field, do you? It's a big... There's
about 20 people.
20 people in it.
Yeah, over two nights. And then the third night will be the final.
Yeah.
So come along.
Nice one. I like that.
And thank you for plugging it.
Hey, not a problem. It's a good event. And it is newsworthy, as they say.
It is.
Now, you've got some stories tucked away. Of course, we're taking a light-hearted look at what the local, national, international papers are printing. Mm. We often chuck in there a Muppet of the Week as a term of endearment. And we have a look at... in fact, we both got an ad of the week this week, which is great. So we'll have a look at those as well. Mm-hmm. A little bit of research, as I was saying before. I've got a Middle East watch because that's continuing to hold my interest in terms of the East. I had I don't know if it was quite a bit. I'd been interested in some of the stories. Again, of course, Christchurch is still very close to us in terms of what's happening down there unfolding. And then Japan, of course, which came on Friday night. With the quake over there and the and the aftermath of all of that, and frankly, I'm fatigued by it all, and I'm just looking at newspapers. So we're going to have All I'm going to say is to the people from Christchurch who are here on the island, welcome, enjoy the island. If you can take some time to actually enjoy the time that you are here for yourself and those close to you that may be with you, just have a phenomenal time, and we will be as hospitable as we can, I'm sure.
Are there many people from Christchurch here?
Yeah, we have. Apparently there's a lot. There was quite a bit of coverage in the local papers, which was great to see, just about
nice
what we can do.
On the front of the Gulf News.
Yeah, the Gulf News had some good stories about a couple of families who've moved up, although there are others. And the Marketplace had some great articles about just what we can actually do in a practical sense on the island to help out. So we have a number of places already that, I mean, Saratoga was mentioned, but there are others who've just said, look, we've got a holiday home that nobody's using, so any families that want to come up, they can use that. So that's a free gratis, so they just do a roster system.
I was on the boat with Brian Mugridge last night, who lives on the island, and he's chairman of Pine Gould Corporation, but he was just coming back from a funeral for 17 people in Christchurch within his company. They were badly hit by that, and there's another 10 people this week. Funerals are taking place, so condolences to everyone in Japan and Christchurch.
So we have the ferry company are offering on SeaLink, are saying, look, people coming up from Christchurch come across for free, so they're not charging people coming across. Kindy's looking at did some fundraising. The school's taking on kids coming up so they can continue their education. So there's some fantastic things.
Yeah, there's loads of kids around Auckland as well, just up from Christchurch.
It's brilliant in terms of just that. Yeah, trying to keep life going, I guess, in some way, shape or form. We've got the heart T-shirts that have come out.
Yeah, it's a good shot of John there.
On sale. Yep. Yeah, with John modelling that. We've got some of the health practitioners on the island, so the massage therapists and body therapists saying, you know, we'll give you free sessions for people who have come up to help release some of the trauma that might be held in the system. So that's fantastic. So there's just all in the Marae. Of course, they've got space there. They've got the kids up at the moment who are on their, learn the cycling, come across from the mainland. So there's the kids are going to be there for a couple of weeks, but then after that, the space is there to help as well. So there's just all these things kind of going on. And of course, in the Marketplace, it was just saying that Sandra Lee, who's involved obviously with the Marae side of it amongst other things from a support perspective, is just saying perfect time for us on the island to donate toys, books, cutlery, clothing, sheets, blankets, everything, just get it to the Red Cross shop and they'll get it down to Christchurch. So there's some real simple things that we can do, because I mean I forget simple things like books, you know. So I know we had the appeal in the island over the last week, but in the midst of everything else, you know, to sit down and say, oh, which I love to do, is grab a book and sit and read it. Suddenly you go, no books. You can't go to the library. You can't just wander down to the bookshop. So it's kind of like, oh, yeah, just often the simple things we take for granted. So I think those practical things are just phenomenal to be able to do. So kind of, although, and then again, you see how people react to some things. So in terms of getting life back to normal, and again, it's things you don't think about, but a story in the Herald that came out was sex workers' location shift angers residents. You have, now, maybe not the topic for a Sunday morning for churchgoers, but it's life, and sex is one of the basic stress releasers for human beings. Without wanting to go into anatomical conversations about this or really get into heavy conversations around this, it's just a basic human need. So regardless of your views on paid for sex, regardless of the fact that it's legal in this country or not, it's just interesting the views of a group of people where sex workers have moved sort of a couple hundred yards down the street. Now they've sort of crossed into a more residential zone. So the residents are saying, oi, you know, op it, go apply your trade somewhere else. And the sex workers are saying, look, we're just trying to get their life back on track, living the life they do, earning a crust, it's their business. But also what was interesting is just some comments about the clients that they are looking after. Again, you've got people who are down there, it's either regulars, i.e. just ordinary blokes who are trying to get through life, may not have a partner or whatever, so those satisfying some basic needs, and also a lot of the rescue workers who are down there. And again, whatever your views about all of this is, it's just I wouldn't class it as an essential service, but it's just one of life's things. So it's just a kind of an interesting look at, as life begins to get back to normal, there are some aspects of life we may not normally think about that are propelled into our consciousness more often than not.
Yeah, it's, you know, people do get angry about a lot of things, and but I think both these quakes have exposed sort of the fragility of human life, and you know, if you're lucky enough to survive, then you have to move on with things.
Yeah. And in the scheme of it, you know, there's it's just with the whole lot of
makes good copy,
with all the other, yeah, it makes good copy, helps sell papers. Mm. Now, you and I have had a conversation before, although it hasn't been on air, about siesta time in New Zealand. And
yes,
you have
yes.
a certain view about yes, siesta time in New Zealand, haven't you?
Well, so, I think, you know, January and February now, we might as well just become Italians and just take the phones off the hooks, and because nobody does anything anymore. They're too busy going to the beach and getting a suntan, and but certainly the month of January, we might as well just decide that's it, close down New Zealand, become like the Italians, and then everybody goes back to work properly on the 1st of February instead of tootling through to March. And it's highly frustrating, especially when you're self-employed, you can't get hold of anybody.
Get hold of people.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly enough, off the back of that, there was a story in the this would be the Christchurch Press.
Yeah, all right.
And I thought, when I read this, I thought, aha, the man's right after all, you see. Mm. So this is headed
you're
up.
You're a
doubt? No, I think it was just, it was more, oh, damn, he's right, rather than that.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
So it was a Sevens Pool and Travellers, it's called here. And it's just a small piece about tourist levels, number of tourists. Tourism, excuse me, into the country, but particularly this was around Wellington. But in amongst the, so, and it's saying that February was 87% occupancy for hotels, etc., compared to 58% in January. So it was kind of saying that the Sevens was a significant, as we'd expect, contributor into that. But it went on to say Tourism Chief Executive David Perks said, January was traditionally the slowest month of the year because that's when Wellington's large government and corporate travel market took a Christmas break. In February, everybody's back. Work, so corporate and government travel is high, and the busiest month of the year for international visitors, etc., etc., etc. So there you go, mate. Yeah.
Well,
if anyone out there should scoff at your siesta, you can.
Let's close down for January. Yeah. Everybody have a good, decent holiday, and then get back to it. But also, I'm finding myself taking a bit of a nap in the afternoon now. Just you know, some of the greatest entrepreneurs in the world call it power naps, but
it's just age, mate.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure I believe in this Western model of having to stay awake all day, but then I can go on all night.
I've been a fan of having a kip every now and again. Sometimes,
in fact, I might do one today,
which is great. Now, I actually learnt something out the Sunday Star Times last week. Sunday Star Times. I know. Yes, round of applause, not only for me but for Sunday Star Times.
I was going to ask you about the difference between a tabloid and a broadsheet later.
So later. All right. Okay,
but in terms of the psychology of the reader and the sophistication of the newspaper.
Oh, mate. I think we've got variations on the theme at 11 o'clock, but it may be that they'll have to bump us off the chair if you get me started on that. But yes, by all means, let's have a conversation around that. But what the thing that I learnt... I had never even thought about this before. It was in an article, it came out the business section, was an article, Charity is Very Big Business.
Mm-hmm.
So, as the papers are prone to do, they like to give you the top 10, you know, top 50 kind of stuff, and all the old graphics boys get in there and have a bit of a play. Basically, the story's about the power of the power 50 of the charity sector, highest earning charities in a $10.5 billion a year sector. That's New Zealand. This is in New Zealand, so it's $10.5 billion New Zealand dollars, the charity sector. And then it's talking about the sophistication of charities, how they've kind of evolved from how a number of us may have thought of them, which was tin can on the street corner, give us your dollars, to actually being run by, you know, very smart people, because they have to, of course, keep generating funds to be able to remain doing the good that they do. What I had never even twigged to was that universities are classed as charities. I had never known that.
Does that mean they get a tax advantage or something?
Well, I presume...
Like a church doesn't pay any tax.
No, correct. So, I mean, number one ranked is St. John of God Healthcare Incorporated. So they're $1.1 billion in terms of gross income.
That's the ambulance people.
That's...
St. John.
Oh, right. Okay, so they're $1.1 billion. So whatever benefits they get as being a charity, alongside Animal Health Board and Partnership Health and those kinds of
places. Some of those guys I haven't heard of before.
The University of Auckland is number two, $748 million. Classed as a charity. I've never... Doesn't. I thought, how do you... Is it... Do you know? I don't... I'm confused.
That's completely different, like something like the Starship Foundation, you know? But those are obviously when you're looking at that, it's not just a charity by income, but it actually is a specified legal entity.
Yeah,
which has
benefits or certain rights,
yes.
which are different from a commercial operation.
Yeah.
Yet I had always put university much more in a commercial operation, earning fees, revenue. Mm. Although I'd never even considered.
The new business school is that they've had to close down other courses to pay for the business school.
That's amazing, eh? So I have a couple of people I know who are actually working for a charity. I don't know if they know that. I think they thought they were working for a university, but they're actually working
the
for a
world of legal. It's a strange place,
isn't it? Isn't it? It's fabulous. I'm just wondering how I could become a charity. There you go.
Yeah.
Maybe I could become a national monument.
Yeah.
Now Middle East Watch. You've got number of weeks as the stories are unfolding out in the Middle East and also just in other countries sort of rippling on from that effect in there. I've just found an engrossing read, if you like, about that part of the world. Now, you've got some stuff tucked away in there, I think, too, that has caught your attention. What's grabbed you on this one?
Well, you know, Gaddafi, in my short time on this planet, he's always been around. I think he's at it now 30 years, but... The headline in the world section of the Sunday Star Times is that noose tightens on Gaddafi. President Barack Obama puts more pressure on Libyan leader but stops short of military action. And first of all, how do you put a noose around somebody's neck and tighten it slowly? That's another thing that they seem to use. But the question being is they try to construct a no-fly zone because Gaddafi's guys are bombing the citizens. But nobody can agree on this. Found out the other day they don't actually have the planes to do it and service it anyway. So it's just like, it's quite ironic to me in a sense that you can use Twitter to start a revolution, but when it comes to good old-fashioned Middle East politics, it takes months for the United Nations to get together and make a decision. But clearly, all is not well in that region. And as we've discussed before, I think... you know, it's going to test the United States, and it's bottled for a fight now.
Yeah, with Libya, what's suddenly changed there is that there's a things are not going as quickly in terms of the overthrow of the incumbent as has happened Tunisia and Egypt. Mm. So suddenly, we've got this situation where I plucked a story out that was. It came from the Libya Daily, but it's headed up. Gaddafi will prevail, top US spy. So there's something slightly I don't get that they actually named their top spy the US's top spy. I thought spies were meant to be people that you didn't really know about, but anyway, they seem to be wanting to claim the limelight. The
next top thing, US intelligence official.
Next thing, we'll have a picture of them and everything else.
Expendable.
But this guy who's actually been slapped across the back of the hand by his own government has top US spy James Clapper, his name is, has agreed with a view that's been put across that Gaddafi's forces would prevail even as the Obama government reaches out to Libyan opposition with direct talks to humanitarian aid. So essentially what they're saying is that they're now in a stage of almost equilibrium where the pushback is such that the advantages the rebel forces had have now been diminished. And I was reading just earlier that they've just lost one of the oil ports that they'd been holding, the rebels had been holding, if that story is correct. So it's almost, and there's some other things going on. I just want to have a quick look at. We've got British spies put £10 million bounty on Gaddafi. So we've got, and just there's some things going on in the stories around this that is almost getting to a farcical stage. It's almost going back to the 600 ways to try and kill Castro type stuff that it's getting into. Yeah. But and there's shades of Iraq in some of the comments from people like the US and people like the Brits saying, yes, we want to do this, but until there is an overall agreement and full support for this, we don't want to be seen as being the ones leading it. That's coming out of the States. Mm. And you're almost going, so they're talking about US, Britain, Italy, I don't think France is in there yet, so let's hold those three for a moment. Mm. But there's shades of the coalition
of the willing,
something like that.
And
there's shades of that coming back again, and you're going, whoa, hang on a minute, this is all getting a bit. So they, so then the US and others were saying, well, look, if the Arab League want us to set up a no-fly zone, we'll have a look at doing that. So the Arab League have come out and said, yes, please. Mm-hmm. They're requesting the UN to do that. There's only two countries that have opted out, and that's Syria and Algeria. Is that somebody phoning here? Sorry, if that's somebody phoning... Oh, no, that's the phone over there. Right. I have bells in my head. So we've got the Arab League saying, yeah, we want a no-fly zone. We've got the States saying, look, it's difficult to do that, but we have experience... This is Hillary Clinton. We have experience of doing this before, end quote. And I'm going, true, you certainly have. but they... so they're saying, in fact, from Iraq, Balkans, elsewhere... So what's happening is the whole conversation around this guy Clapper, sorry, as the quote was, over time I think the regime will prevail with respect to the rebels in Libya. Whether or not they will succeed or not, I think they're in for a tough row, end quote. Mm-hmm. So it's almost at the stage, you get a sense somehow that some of the leaders of, like the, you know, Camerons and the Obamas, were kind of going. They were watching Tunisia, watching Egypt, because they were all still sticking a little bit with Gaddafi because of all the dealings they've done with him before. Mm. But now it was suddenly like, no, we have to actually come out and say, right, enough. And we've all heard the rhetoric about he's got to go and everything else. Yeah.
Well, it's a bit of a snooker because, you know, they said all public opinion is he has to go, but then now his public are actually saying we support him.
Yeah.
So it's classic foreign diplomacy 101, isn't it?
That's right. Which public are we talking about?
Yeah.
And then suddenly they're going, hang on a minute, he's not going as quickly as we thought. He's actually putting up resistance. He's getting really messy over there.
Now they're going to get caught
by either they have to go in boots and all, or where else do they go?
Because it's kind of put themselves the whole thing,
in the corner. It's quite ugly. And so now they've got this £10 million bounty on Gaddafi. They're trying to get his close advisors and security people around.
Isn't that the same figure they had on Saddam? Yeah.
Well, I think they've just got a suitcase sitting somewhere with $10 million in it, tucked away for emergency operations.
Break out the special $10 million suitcase. But they never need to use it, but yeah.
This is such the way this is written is such a strange story. And again, this is came out of the Arab News Networks. Tripoli, March 6th, British and US spies are reportedly secretly trying to lure Colonel Gaddafi's closest bodyguards and aides with £10 million so they could hand over the dictator to the spies, dead or alive. Elite British troops from SAS and SBS protecting the cash-carrying MI6 and CIA agents who are moving around Libya with the intentions of assembling a hit squad to carry out the plan called The Policy. Now, this has come out the Daily Star, so you have to be, you know, quoting that past bit. So the Star is not notorious for its in-depth political analysis of things. The paper quoted security sources saying that despite the international hatred of Gaddafi, the West would prefer him alive. Oh, it goes on there. £10 million from the Brits and Americans to make it happen. They've infiltrated close bodyguards. So apparently, there's guys wandering around with pocketfuls of cash. As sweeteners, not the main bulk. The main money is kept in a bank in Switzerland or Liechtenstein, which could be transferred within seconds, isn't it?
You got Liechtenstein in, brilliant.
Yeah, now.
Yeah.
Now, I was reading that and I thought, and I just finished reading a book in which it had been talking about the CIA Contra deals with Iraq a while ago, and they had $10 million, and $10 million. Surprise! 10
pieces of silver,
salted away. Mm-hmm. Yep, to for nefarious means to get to the Contras, but they sent it to the wrong bank account. So the CI, the person who was doing the electronic transfer, transposed two numbers. So it never got into the I've never thought of Contras having a bank account, but it never got into the, I'll just take the post box, dear, the postbook. I'm just down to it. But it went into the wrong account. So there's some bloke woke up with 10 million of the CI. A bit like the what happened with, was it Westpac over here? Oh, who was it that was, the money?
I think he called in that woman as like millionaire. But something, I don't know, it's bizarre. Anyway.
But the thing with that is that I think the slight difference is if the CIA come knocking in your door asking for the money back, you're more likely to probably go, absolutely, here,
you're
you
not going to know
it,
it's,
you know?
The thing is, you're not going to know it's from
it's
the CIA.
The CIA.
You think, I just had a text about this and you've won 400,000, some dodgy scam promotion over in the UK, and it's going, oh, great, 400,000, yeah, right.
Superb, so yeah, there's all sorts of that going on.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just... It's just, I mean, I guess, what do our good friends at The Guardian say about all this?
Well, yes, this is my first port of call, I have to say, for continuing views on what's going on. So as far as Libya is going on, the headline is about revolution stalls as the regime mounts show of strength, which is just what we've been talking about. It's basically just the fight back in Benghazi, heart of the uprising. Libya's rebels are trying to kickstart stalled revolution. Euphoria of victory was turning to memory as routine had set into place a recent flush with hope and opportunity. After ousting a dictator of 42 years in a couple of days, anything that had seemed possible no longer is.
Back to your mate, top US intelligence officer, James Clapper.
Yeah.
Who did obviously propose quite a grim scenario, but I just don't think they got the gear to fight.
That's what this is saying. They're saying unless there is more help given to the rebels, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So basically, and the other thing, your comment about, you know, whose people are we talking about? Because it's saying that it's going on to say the story. Benghazi's rebels were not prepared for Gaddafi's ability to rally his supporters and mount an effective rearguard action that has stopped the revolution, at least for now. So,
well, I mean, it's funny, you know, you talk about revolutions, right? I mean, this is quite classic context, but you talk about revolutions, but could we have one in our own country with the coastal and foreshore seabed issue still arising? There's a law going through Parliament at the moment written by the Māori Party, which Nationalists supports, that hands over all the coast to the iwi. And... is that enough to lead to a revolution in our country?
Do we care enough about it?
Well, this is a very good question, isn't it? I mean, it's a big issue. It's a local issue. It's
an
election year.
Well, do we know enough to care enough about it?
Well,
maybe
you can get a report.
Question.
You can actually read the Māori Party briefing paper, which these people at the Coastal Coalition have taken an ad out today in the Sunday Star Times.
The Sunday Star
Times. Who must be making a lot of money from ads at the minute. But it's basically saying Nationalists broken its promise and betrayed the whole country. And read this paper, form your own view. Send it to your friends and tell National MPs that what you think of them for supporting this bill. I not a lot.
But are people going to? I mean, am I going to go online, download the bill, read it? I mean, I don't.
Well,
you know,
if you woke up after the election, let's say you wake up on the 2nd of January because we're closed down in January.
We are. Yes, that's right.
In Damien's future of
that's
New Zealand.
Right. In the future siesta time. So we wake up on the 1st of February.
Yeah, but on the 2nd of January, you walk down to the beach, and somebody tells you you can't walk on the beach because it belongs to the iwi. How are you going to feel as a pioneer?
Now, you see, that's... What I reckon is, rather than putting it in the ads like it's a massive betrayal, EB now control the whole coastline and everything else, because I'm much more likely to go yawn, yawn, and this is just me.
Well, we know it's the Queen.
I'm going to go yawn, yawn, you know, turn over. But if they started putting stories in, along the lines of what you've just talked about, you know, Willie Smith and family goes down to the beach and is turned back.
You're taking my sausage away.
Yeah. Then I'm more likely to read a story around that and go, oh my God, how could that happen? And then within there it says, look, this is because of this bill or whatever.
Yeah.
Then I'm potentially more likely to get rocked up about that.
But they're calling this a racist bill. But you know, what I'm saying, what does it take in this country to have a revolt and regime change and to instigate a no barbecue zone or something?
We just roll over, though. I mean, you know, The Hobbit. Can we have a movie done here? Can you change your laws? Yes, of course we can. Can we have the World Cup here? Can you change it? Yes, of course we can. Can we, you know, it's like, ugh. I mean, we haven't got, I don't know. When do we stand up and, I mean, on the island, we, I mean, you just have to say the ferry fares are going up, and we're all down there with posters at the at the pier or the refuse station or whatever. There's always pockets of the
back pockets
of the back pocket. Yeah, but that's the back pocket. There's always pockets of resistors on this island,
resistance,
as we know.
Little resistance.
That's a really, really great question about what would it take to actually get us as a nation racked up enough to actually commit to take.
Well, first of all,
although we have
the New Zealand Herald has to be able to sell newspapers for it to happen, and it has to be a cause that, I mean, you can go from zero awareness to 100% awareness on an issue in this country within a week. Yeah. You know, 4 days of consecutive stories will give you what you need to know. But yeah, I just think it's a big one. I mean, in terms of the coastline, it's just totally under the radar. I mean, this was an issue in the last election cycle.
Yeah,
with Donny Brasco and all the other boys, which leads on to the emergence of sort of right-wing politics again, I think, in New Zealand, which it's subtly might be just to eliminate the ACT party and Rodney Hyde.
Well, this is another of your stories.
Well,
isn't
you know,
it,
the thing is, that, you know, it looks the ACT party's membership down now to under 1,000 or around 1,000, and Rodney still wearing that pinstripe suit and looking rather brutish on it, but the man just hasn't changed his style. And you know, I think politics after the Len Brown election, it's going to be interesting to see how Auckland politics rolls out, especially in seats like Epsom. But I think local issues will come back to the fore again.
You reckon?
I think so. Yeah,
it could be on a winner.
Yeah.
All right. Mm. Well, look, we're going to take a coffee break. We've been ranting a bit, which is cool because we'll come back and I'll explain why ranting is good. We'll explain why ranting is good. But first of all, we'll take a bit of a coffee break and then see where we go from there. Oh, how good's that, Bonanza Ska? Fantastic, absolutely superb. You're listening to Peacock and Bulldogs on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Variations on a Theme with Mark Smith, where your intrepid DJ takes you down some of the lesser-known backwaters of the classical music repertoire. Join me on Sundays at 11 o'clock on Waiheke Radio.
Go on a cyber voyage around the planet. You want to see the coast of Africa, Latin America? Yeah. Or do you want to go deep into the desert and learn where the blues came from? You want to know where the clubs are in Berlin and Paris? What they play? The gypsies rule the show. Then tune in to The Navigator on Waiheke Radio. Every Sunday, 7 to 9, 107.4 and 88.3 on your dial.
Ah, indeed, indeed. Waiheke Radio, 88.3, 107.4 FM. You're having a listen to Beat Copy and Bulldogs, where myself and my guest Damien Smith are taking a light-hearted look at what the local, national and international papers are printing. Just having a bit of a chat, really, about the stories that have captured our attention over the past week or weeks. Yes, a couple of the shows coming up today. Of course, tonight, The Navigator, 6 to 9, cracker show. So have a listen out there for some amazing songs and tunes from around the world.
And if you're sitting at your computer, you can listen to it as
Yeah,
well.
Yeah. www.waihikiradio.org.nz. So you can always stream live from there. You can download the podcasts. Excuse me, it's all on for there. And variations on a theme or of a theme at 11 o'clock. So I think we've got a variation of variations in a theme. I'm not sure what's happening. We could have a mystery guest. We'll see what happens as that unfolds. Now, flagpoles. I know you're looking. Where's he going with this flagpoles? Mm. Have you ever thought of having a flag? Have you ever had a flag?
I've had a flag.
Have you?
Yes.
We get what flag or flags have you flown on your flag?
I flew the New Zealand flag and I flew the Irish flag. And at one time, a friend of mine had a Scottish flag. I think we put that one up. But we used to have the ceremony at 6 o'clock. You know, like the oldies.
Yeah.
The flag would go up and everyone would have a gin and tonic, and we'd toast the Queen. And I'd laugh about that because, you know, being from Northern Ireland,
yes, that's right.
You've got a dual brain going on about all those things. But it's strangely nice to hear your flag fluttering in the wind.
Is it?
It is.
I've never heard of it. Oh, okay. Well,
ask a sailor; they tell you that.
Yeah, we have quite a few flag flying.
People don't like it if they live next door to you because it keeps them up at night. You know.
Well, there's that. I've interesting you
in fact,
say
there's
that.
There's a lady on the island asked me to remove my pole. And it went in the end.
I'm not going to say
who it is.
No, right. Name and shame. No, name. Apparently, naming and shaming is the way to get people to change their behaviour.
Too late.
All right.
So the house is gone.
There is the whatever the cord that comes down the side of the flagpole. Mm-hmm. If that's on the outside in the wind, you get that clink 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 clink. And at 3 a.m, if you're a light sleeper as I am, it drives you up the wall. So the smart operators, of course, put it inside the flagpole, and then you don't get the clink, 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 clink.
But you still also get the flapping of the flag.
Well, the flapping of the flag I can put up with, really, because that kind of, you say, you can get into a gentle, I suppose, everybody to their own. Anyway.
But it is a national right to have your own flagpole if you want it, seemingly.
Is that right?
You can pop it on your property, stick it in the ground.
You don't need planning permission?
Yeah, because it needs to go down, right down, about, you know, 6 meters, the hole, and then you put the thing in. Take off, otherwise.
My reason for asking you about flags is that, because we have quite a number of houses on the island that do have flags, and some of that is that people enjoy, as you say, doing the whatever it is to the Queen or whom, whatever country they may come from. And also there's the wind direction, as we were mentioning before, about you can just quickly check where the wind's coming from, which is important for a number of us on the island. So we are at the station, we're actually having a competition to win a flagpole, which is like a fully fledged flagpole, all the gear you need to get it in the ground. Well, I don't mean you get post hole borers and things like that, but you get the sleeve and the bit where the pole goes and all that kind of stuff. So if anybody's out there keen to win themselves a flagpole, so I think this thing's about I can't remember the height, but it's a proper flagpole. It's the real deal.
So, how did the promotions team come up with this one?
Well, this was it came from a conversation on the boat. The Arthur of Arthur's Roundtable. That's where you can check out the competition. So that's on any Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday between 10 a.m. and midday. Arthur's Roundtable. If you want to win a flagpole, Arthur was having a conversation with a guy on the ferry. The guy on the ferry happens to have the company that makes flagpoles. And he said to Arthur, how would you guys like to do a competition to have people win a flagpole? So Arthur's round table, 10 to 12. If you fancy a flagpole, you can have one.
Get it on.
Plus, we've actually got donated one for the station as well.
Great.
So when we move up to the White House, we'll have our own flagpole.
Yeah, you know, you go to Auckland Airport, all the big flags and stuff?
Yeah, yep.
I mean, it does.
Beautiful. When you get the big, especially the airport one is a cracker.
Mm.
If it's the same one, that it's huge. And it just, when the wind's going right, it's just magnificent.
Yeah. And what happened to the New Zealand flag, the new design? Is that all finished now?
Oh, I don't know. There's so many people have got their own. So, I mean, I quite like the Maori flag emblem. I thought that was actually quite powerful and striking.
Mm.
But then there's the hybrids with the Union Jack with the fern on it, or the, you know, a kiwi and gumboots and goodness knows what all. So, I don't know. Where, I mean, I'll wait and see.
As long as it's not the Aussie one.
As long as it's not the Aussie one. But you said we're already related to them anyway, so I don't know. Now, bankers are back in the UK. How good is this?
No, you're not allowed to call them bankers anymore.
What are they?
This guy got name suppression saying...
Title suppression. No, this was... that's the second story. That's a good one. No, because the link, but that's Sir Fred. Yes, you're quite correct. So I was impressed with Sir Fred. But
when is a banker not a banker?
Exactly. So and that's banker with a B, by the way, not banker with a W. That's banker with a B. So and this was the Bank of Scotland. So this came out the Scotsman. So this was Bank of Scotland.
Oh, Bank of Scotland.
Boasts of bonus restraint as its senior executives pocket only $28 million.
That's a bad year.
Superb. So it's wonderful.
We have to divide that by. Six people,
yes, that's quite correct. So, and yes, it's all tied into stock, but I mean, frankly, it's just... not all of it. I mean, they still get a mil or so, cash in the
bank. Well, our stock market, I mean, yesterday, this week was the 2-year anniversary of the low, and so it's back to where it was pre-crash. So, time for another crash, I think.
Yeah, well, Chief Executive of the Royal Bank of Scotland being awarded a pay and bonus package worth $7.7 million for 2010. So that's $4.5 million worth of shares, which you can cash in a couple of years' time, $1.2 million basic salary and $2 million bonus in readies. So that's not bad. Bonus awards for the bank's top nine. So that makes it a bit better, not six. So top nine executives for the year totaled almost $27.9 million. So that's all right. Aye. Not bad. Not bad. Consider they were taken to. I think the taxpayers are still paying that anyway because they still own it. So there you go.
It's called a government underwrite by the people.
Government underwrite. It's called a rip-off. But, sorry, allegedly, supposedly, whatever.
Which is okay if your government can afford to pay it, like Britain can, but if you're in Ireland or in Iceland or Portugal Spain even now.
You're kind of stuffed. Now, this is your Sir Fred story. So this is the when is a banker, not a banker. This is phenomenal. And what I love about this is it takes us into the world of the super injunction. So it's not just an injunction.
Now, the lawyers have found a new way to make money.
Yeah. So you think, oh, look, there's too many people taking that injunction.
Isn't that just putting it through the complicator?
We need a way of upping the fee on this. So let's call it a super injunction.
Stick it through the complicator and I know... Super injunction. That's it.
Bingo. Yeah, so they'd probably get a raise just for coming up with the name. Yep, the Complicator. Yeah. I like that. That's brilliant. Can I use that? I think that's fabulous.
You can.
The Complicator.
It's not mine originally because a lawyer told me that one. He said, Damien, I take what you're telling me, but I'm going to put it through the complicator and then I'll send you the bill. And I thought, yeah. Brilliant. He said, no, you don't need that one to go through the complicator.
So this one's a former Royal Bank of Scotland. So there's a link here. Former Royal Bank of Scotland Chief Sir Fred Goodwin. Who was the man who was tagged with taking the bank to the brink of collapse. I'm sure there were others involved, but he was the man who kind of got it in the face for it. Now, he's at the centre of a gagging mystery as he was taking a court order preventing publication of information about him. So Fred, who presided over the near collapse of RBS, took out the super injunction, which is understood to be so strict that it even prevents him being identified as a banker. The terms of the most super injunctions are so stringent that the media is normally prevented from reporting on them. So this is so secret that nobody knows about them except the people that do, which in this case appears to be everybody now, because the details of the case emerged in the House of Commons when Liberal Democrat MP John Hemming used his parlementary privilege to reveal that Sir Fred had obtained the gagging order. So in Parliament, under parliamentary privilege, because apparently you can't get pinged for what you say in there if you're an MP, this guy tells everybody what the super injunction was all about, which the super injunction prevents people from doing. So then, of course, you can report on that and what was covered inside Parliament. So the point of having a super injunction is just to pay a lawyer a huge sum of money for no result out there.
Well, it brings you back to that case with Martin Devlin.
Brilliant.
In the city, where Martin had a bit of a boozy day, I think, around Christmas, and had a row with the wife and jumped on the car just outside the ferry terminal, actually, down because he was supposed to go to Waikiki, and he was late watching football or something on TV. But anyway, his lawyer banged in the supreme name suppression injunction or whatever, but everybody knew, and everybody was writing in newspapers, it's Martin Devlin, and eventually he had to come out and say it was him, and it did more damage than good. I mean, if he'd have just manned up and said, I've manned up, I nearly broke the bank, and so they paid me this, but, you know. Can't tell the story now.
It's phenomenal. So apparently, super injunctions are laws to prevent news organisations from revealing the identities of those involved in legal disputes, or even reporting the fact that such restrictions have been imposed.
Well, look, you know, I can see until the case is sorted that being in place, but it's just a joke, isn't it? Really?
Well, it is.
You can have DJ privilege on the island here. You can say anything you want within the confines of this room,
within the broadcasting booth. Do you reckon?
I reckon that should be the new rule. Yeah, don't be afraid. Be a lion. Be a lion.
Be a lion and just roar. Just walk into the handcuffs when you go out the door in the libel suits.
Just others too, please.
As you walk outside.
Good morning, constable.
So anyway, that was taking out the Scotsman, who are now not allowed to say any more about it because the super injunction says so.
Ironically, it was about a Scots bank as well.
It was, yes. Yeah, it was.
Local reporting, that is.
He created a bit of money out of that. Now, I'm going to come on to the... I think we'll come on to the Muppets and a little bit of research, because something you mentioned there triggered me onto that. But there was this was another out of the Business Herald that I quite liked this story. This was about boat building is back. And I hadn't realised just how many of these super yachts we're building in this country at the moment.
This is one thing we do well.
Boat building. Big boat building.
Along with making movies.
Yeah, but if you make a movie, you get money thrown at you and we'll change the law. I don't think it was the case for these. Well, it might have been. I don't know. It snuck under there.
This is good, because movie executives probably order boats.
Probably order the boats,
so
yes.
It's sort of recirculating
capital. There you go. So this was a story that was centred around a boat that got launched this week. It must have been launched. So this is what they call the super yachts, which are anywhere from between 15 million and 140 million to build these things.
Yeah, what's the name of that one?
This thing's the Vertigo. Yeah. Oh, sorry, not the Vertigo, which is Vertigo, it's called. Which, if you stuck it on its end and you were standing on the top of it, I can imagine it would be, because it's 67 metres long. This thing is just colossal,
It's a monster.
It is, but it's pretty spectacular. It's got its own inbuilt swimming pool, which you need, because if you're floating about in the ocean, you don't want to swim in the sea, so your own inbuilt swimming pool. It's got a space for about six tender vehicles. It's probably got a heli bit on there. I haven't seen that bit yet. Which is amazing. Actually, there was a huge boat out in the bay over summer that had been commented on, which apparently was just a tender boat for an even huger boat that couldn't get in this close, so it was parked somewhere else. You got this massive thing that sort of caused darkness to spread over Oniroa Main Street whenever it berthed. It was that big. Well, maybe not.
It's
that
a
big.
Whole world, a different world out there,
it's
of the oceans.
Well, what highlighted that even more was one of the sub-stories in this article, which was the kind of spin-off businesses that are... thriving in this country now because of the builds of these super yachts, because we do it so well. And in fact, we're at the moment we're on I think one of the world's most expensive refits of a yacht is being taken place in this country now as well. So we've obviously got an incredible reputation for that, which is phenomenal.
The boys and girls have got skills in that area,
which is brilliant. So there's a company here which is called Yacht Lifeline. And these guys, it begins in the story somewhere about selling first aid kits.
Yeah.
But when you listen to what a first aid kit is, a first aid kit, I don't know, in quotation marks, is like a fully functional surgical hospital unit
with the wacker packers and stuff.
But this has got so you could do as effective surgery on one of these things as you could in Auckland Hospital, and it also comes with your own specialist surgeons and specialist medical team. So
just like international rescue.
Yeah, Thunderbirds are go. So to actually say, you know, a first aid kit, it's like is that kind of one of those Kiwi understatements.
Mate, you can have a first aid kit. Scissors in there and two two bandages.
That's right, two heart surgeons, you've got a special
bit of Savlon and
So this is phenomenal.
No, but it is
very impressive. I was very impressed by that.
That's the sort of stuff the country should be doing.
Now, you talked about blokes fronting up, you know, couldn't you just front up and say, look, you know, I took the money or I was late or whatever it was. There's a resurgence of blokeism, according to research. So there's a couple of pieces of research that put us blokes firmly in the spotlight. One came out of the International Express, God love them, because they give such fantastic research. It's just they gave us the UK's most favourite dessert not that long ago, most favourite pudding, which was apple crumble or apple pie, kind of crumble pie. They just give us such fantastic research like that. And the other one they gave me last week was that walking to school keeps you
regular.
It reduces your stress more than being driven to school. And you think. and you think, fantastic.
And I remember my dad driving us to school and nobody talked. And he'd try and talk the whole way and we'd all just look at each other. And
the other thing, but that research was based on doing a simulated walk to school and a simulated drive to school. So I was puzzled as to how you do that stuff. Anyway, this one is saying that apparently men, in our lifetime as a man, we will say sorry over 1.9 million times.
My God.
Isn't that just staggering? Apparently we'll spend 441 days in the pub, spending on average £10.88 each time. That's if you're in the UK, by the way.
It's under your $17?
Yeah. Just under your $17, my $18 benchmark. Yes, you're quite right. 570 on designer clothes, 2,000 on gadgets. Oh, incredible. 1.9 million times we'll say sorry as a bloke.
I'm going to stop saying sorry now.
That's one. Now, the other thing, and this came out of the Sunday Star Times, this is ad men tell us what it means to be a good bloke. It seems suddenly we've gone all retro about fellas. And this is a story by Sarah Harvey, reports on the return of the hard man. So this is following up on ads by a brewery, which is now extolling the blokeism about. So you get points, apparently, for anything you're doing that is blokish, and you get minus points if you do things that are unblokish. So you can whatever the unblokish things are. So they get these billboards, amongst other things, I think, from what I understand, and they get a little counter on it that says, oh, if you do this, then you score minus points, bloke points. Mm. Or if you do this, you get plus X number of bloke points. So there's that. There's also a company that's talking about Real Man Food. Whatever Real Man Food is. So there's campaigns about blokes being real men. In this story, though, so it talks about men being confused. So there's a real uncertainty around masculinity, apparently. We're confused about who we are as a bloke, which is why we're swinging between a thing called... we want to...
I never thought you'd mention swinging on the show, by the way.
Only in a musical sense.
Okay.
Because the... we want to take back mantrol, quote, end quote. apparently, we're fed up with being metrosexuals. We want mantrol. Have you any idea? I'm
just going to stick to what I do and do it well.
The only thing I can think is something to do with, instead of control, it's mantrol.
Some girl said to me the other day, what's the opposite of a cougar? A manther.
A manther?
As in a panther?
Oh, what? So
I heard another one called a rhino. Like you're a rhino, if you're, but anyway, this is it's just I'm over all this classification system stuff. It's just, you know, but there is a genuine the girls of Auckland out there now are genuinely underwhelmed by the blokes that are out there, and the blokes are having to turn to Russian women and imported.
Is that right?
Yeah, so the good old Kiwi blokes find it hard to get a lady out there.
Well, that turning to women from overseas, as you say, was that the Rock, of course, got into trouble with a win a wife competition. So that, they had originally a win a wife competition, which didn't go down too well. I think our win a fly pole is much better than that. But
I've never heard, but in all my life, I've never heard about win the flag pole as a competition.
It's so a
this
cracker,
is this
isn't
is a first.
This
yeah.
is this is our tallest competition ever. It's great. But apparently, on that other promotion, they took you to Ukraine to buy a woman who would become your wife. So so whether that's indicative of the fact that blokes aren't cutting it well enough for Kiwi women, I don't know. But apparently, according to this whole thing about us blokes being insecure about ourselves and needing to resort to advertising to tell us we're a bloke or not, comes from the fact that they figure some research has been done amongst ad agencies that shows men are feeling vulnerable and need to reaffirm their masculinity.
Ad agencies should be abolished from this world because they just sell a fear or... You know, it's so morally corrupt.
But we would like to thank all our sponsors for keeping us on air. Thank you very much. I'll just say that
that's
very quickly.
Different.
Now, sticking with research...
You didn't declare your sponsorship list. You know?
We have a minute to go. And we have got a variation of a theme, because actually Trevor is doing variations of a theme, which I think, listeners, is going to be... I don't think it will be a cracker. It will be a cracker. But I think it's about classical variations of folk music. Which will be an absolute blinder to listen to. So have a tune into that. So I've got about 30 seconds to just tell you that ranting and raving is good for the soul, according to research and mental health. So apparently when we do have a bit of a rant, it releases all sorts of stress and toxins in our system and is very good for us. And I might pick up again on that.
I'm not
next
saying
week.
Sorry. I'm not saying sorry.
Very cool. So let me say, Damien, thank you very much. Yet again for joining me on the show here.
It's fun. Thank you.
Now, go well at the fundraiser, of course. When you'll be singing what? Who
on
will
Thursday
you be?
Night.